Welcome to the Untold Podcast, capturing the culture's imagination through speculative fiction. I'm your host, Nathan James Norman. This is a bonus episode. What you're about to hear is a sampler of several of the CGC, ChristianGeekCentral.com members, sharing some thoughts on space exploration. As with any network, you might find a new show that you like, and you might find shows that you don't. It's the nature of a network. So if you find something you like, go start to listen and subscribe to their work. So now, without further ado, the CGC Space Exploration Sampler.
Incoming transmission.
Hi, I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions and ChristianGeekCentral.com. Welcome to this special Christian Geek Central Network sampler episode. I put the call out in the fall to the members of the Christian Geek Central Network, inviting anyone who wants to participate to put together some kind of segment that in some loose way is related to space exploration. And so three members of our network sent me some content back, and I'm going to share that with you guys along with, of course, you're going to hear me blabbing as well. David Arrington from Helix Reviews is going to share some favorite space exploration movies. Matt and Kim of POS TOS are going to be talking about an episode of Voyager. And Nathan James Norman of the Untold Podcast is going to be sharing an original short story. And then you'll just see what I have to say when I start blabbing at you. So without any further ado, let's get to it.
Hello, all you Spirit Bladers and everybody else listening to this episode. This is David Arrington of the Helix Reviews podcast, and I'm here to participate in the Christian Geek Central Space Exploration Extravaganza crossover episode thing that you're listening to right now. And I was trying to think, okay, what should I do that is space exploration themed, outer space themes, you know? I primarily do reviews on my show, and so I'm kind of thinking, okay, you know, should I review a movie? I could do Star Trek Beyond. I haven't reviewed that on the show yet, but then the idea struck me that I'd never done a top 10 space odysseys before, and so that is what I'm gonna do here and now. I'm actually gonna do a top 5. I normally do at least a top 10 when I do a countdown on the Helix Reviews podcast. And when I was creating this list of space operas that I'm going to do here, I actually did create a top 10 list. And so I'm only going to count down the top 5 here because I have a limited amount of time here. But I'm going to release my numbers 10 through 6 on my own podcast. You can check it out on iTunes, on Stitcher. It's the Helix Reviews podcast, or you could go to helixreviews.blogspot.com to check it out there. Also, I always like to set up the parameters when I'm doing a list to say what does and doesn't fit into this list. And so Space Odyssey, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. You know, it takes place primarily in outer space, not on Earth. So, you know, something like Man of Steel, yes, there's portions that take place in outer space, but it's primarily set on Earth. So, you know, I couldn't do something along the lines of Man of Steel. But to open up the spectrum of movies, I decided to go ahead and include movies that primarily took place on a planet, but as long as it's not Earth, as long as it's an alien world or a world other than Earth. Because when I decided upon that, again, it just opened up the amount of movies that I had to choose from, and so I think you'll get a more interesting and diverse list, hopefully, than you would have gotten before. All right, so let's start off this list here with number 5, and it is a movie that takes place in one of my favorite franchises of all time, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Guardians of the Galaxy is in at number 5. Guardians of the Galaxy is just pure fun. It is just so fun. It basically gets a group of characters that don't necessarily all like each other, especially at first. It puts them all together on this mission that they kind of have to go do, And they eventually learn to be a team. Yes, it's something we've seen before, but it's something that we have not seen before with these characters specifically, and the way that they interact with each other, and the writing and direction by James Gunn is just spot on. It's fantastic. I love this movie. Guardians of the Galaxy is a lot of fun. In at number four, I got my Star Trek movie of the list, and that would be, for me, Star Trek Into Darkness. Now, I know a lot of Star Trek fans are not a big fan of this movie. I know a lot of them are like, this is one of the lower movies on the list. I'm a fan of the new Star Trek. I have not really seen much of any of the old Star Trek. Really, when I got on board with Star Trek is with J.J. Abrams' reboot with, you know, Star Trek, which came out in 2009. And then they released Star Trek Into Darkness a few years later. And in my opinion, that was a step up from the first movie. It got a lot better as far as the characters go, just deepening the characters, I think, and also as far as themes go. Thematically, this is a very interesting movie, I think, with Benedict Cumberbatch spectacularly playing Khan. I just love his version of Khan here. Again, I have not seen Star Trek II, A Search for Spock. Search for Spock. I can't say, no, it's not A Search for Spock. That is a different Star Trek movie. Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan. Wow. Okay, sorry, all you Trekkies out there. I'm messing up all your favorite stuff here, or your least favorite stuff here, or whatever. All that stuff, I'm messing it all up. But in my opinion, the relationship and the dynamic between Khan and Kirk in this movie, and the parallels that they draw between these two characters, brings up some very interesting thematic ideas that I think they do a good job playing with in this movie, all the while making like a spectacularly cool visual movie and a very interesting character movie and just a blast. A lot of fun, a lot of action-packed goodness. Which again, I know, you know, that's a lot of Star Trekkies. Trekkies are like, no, that's not what Star Trek is about. And okay, you know, I guess I can get that, but you know, since I'm not a fan of the old ones just because of lack of watching them, that means that I this is where I'm at as far as Star Trek goes. And so, you know, maybe I need to watch some of the old ones and I'll like them better. I don't know. But anyway, that was number four, Star Trek Into Darkness. In at number three is one that primarily is Earthbound. Not Earthbound, but bound to a planet, and that is Pitch Black. I love this movie. This is the first Riddick movie. It's followed up by Chronicles of Riddick, which is a step down, but still enjoyable in my opinion, and then followed by Riddick, which is another step down and less enjoyable in my opinion. But the first Pitch Black is a great monster movie. That's really what this is. I think probably more so than a space opera, but it technically takes place in outer space, and so I think I can put it on the list here. Well, I just did, so I'm gonna say I can. I love Vin Diesel as Riddick. I think that is the role that he was born to play, you know, even more so than his character, you know, in the Fast and Furious movies or whatever else he's in. This is the character that he was born to play, and I love watching him in the most. There's also some pretty interesting thematic content brought up in the first Pitch Black movie with the nature of villains and heroes and the nature of monsters and the monsters in the people as opposed to also the monsters in the actual world that they're in, where all the monsters are going to come out and kill them all, and it's awesome. I love this movie. Pitch Black is number three. And at number two is a movie directed by my favorite director, and that is Interstellar, directed by Christopher Nolan. Now, I do have a little bit of an issue with this movie as far as that weird part near the end. I didn't think they set it up properly for them to go in that direction near the end. So I have a little bit of issue with that whole, the bookshelf sequence there. I'm not crazy about that sequence, but like everything else I love in this movie. I mean, from the point where they're actually on Earth, you could do a whole movie with them on that Earth, and I would totally be invested in that because it was so well done, so... Just again, what Christopher Nolan does so well is characters and theme, and that's what I really like in my movies, and he does it really well with Interstellar. He creates these really great characters and characters that I want to follow into outer space and watch and then see their adventures, and I want to see them succeed. And so when I do see them succeed, I go yay, and when I see them fail, I go no. It's just because I love these characters. I know some people have a problem with the whole Matt Damon bit. I don't. I actually really like that whole sequence in the movie as well. This is just a fantastic space opera. My second favorite to, I mean, obviously, what's number one is Battlefield Earth, right? That's an amazing movie. Everybody loves that movie, right? God, okay. Maybe not. Maybe it's not Battlefield Earth. I've never actually even seen it. I just know everybody says that it's so terrible. I'm not the kind of guy that tortures myself with bad movies, so I have not seen Battlefield Earth, and it is definitely not my number one movie. All right, my number one movie, as far as space operas go, it's a little bit of a cheat because it's not just a movie. It's a TV series and a movie, and so if you were waiting for this one to get named, well, here it is. We got Firefly / Serenity, a TV series that got canceled too soon, and they made a movie to wrap it up, directed and created by Joss Whedon. So great, so fun. It created a group of characters that are immensely likable. And these are the characters that you would want to hang out with. These are the characters that you'd want to go on a trip with in the Firefly. Oh, in the Serenity. I mean, sorry if I'm messing up all your guys' fandom now too. But these are the guys that you'd want to take a trip with. And once you're in kind of their little family, then you have like a group of people that would die for each other pretty much, because it's like they've created a family on this ship, and it is so awesome. And in some ways it's actually kind of a good thing that it was ultimately canceled and then gotten a movie to conclude it and everything. You know, in some ways it's good, because if it had continued on for, you know, 5 seasons or something and never got a movie, yeah, maybe it would have played out the way Joss Whedon would have wanted it to play out, you know, or maybe it would probably have still been great, right? You know, you got all these likable characters, you got all these great actors playing these great characters, but then you'd have, you know, the second season's not as good as the first season, and oh, they kind of make up for it in the third season. You'd have all this other stuff, you know, whereas this, you have like what's now kind of just a mini series and then a movie, and it's just so concise. Every single one of the episodes is great. Every single bit is great in this whole story, in this whole universe that Joss Whedon created here. And because it did get canceled, and it didn't continue on TV, and then, you know, somehow they convinced the studio to give them enough money to make a movie. So because of that, we have an entire story about these characters that is fantastic from beginning to end, all the way through. And so even though, yeah, it's kind of sad, I'd like to see more in this universe. I'd like to see more with these characters. They're so good, but it might actually be a better thing that it ultimately ended the way it ended up. Anyway, that's my thoughts on Firefly and Serenity. So my top five, again, are we got Guardians of the Galaxy in at number 5, and at number 4, we got Star Trek Into Darkness. In at number 3, we have Pitch Black. In at number 2, we got Interstellar. And in at number 1, we have Firefly / Serenity. If you want to check out my numbers 10 through 6, go on over to the Helix Reviews podcast. It's on iTunes, it's on Stitcher, it's on helixreviews.blogspot.com. It's on all those places. Thank you, Pater, for putting all this together. Thank you for creating the Christian Geek Central Network and for inviting me to join with you in this endeavor. And I hope and pray that it goes well for you and your production company. That's all from me, guys. This is David Arrington of the Helix Reviews podcast, signing out. Bye-bye.
I love Star Trek, which is why I hate bad Star Trek. And welcome to the Christian Geek Central crossover sampler episode.
The sampler? That's very popular.
Yes, we're teaming up with several other members of Christian Geek Central to all deliver our own episode along a simple theme. The theme this time is
space exploration.
After all, we are exploring the unknown.
Well, crap. What am I supposed to do with space exploration as a theme for a Star Trek episode? Just kidding. Because we all know Star Trek's all about space.
We gotta get moving. Pater said we've only got 15 minutes.
15. I can do this. This is POSBOI, one small step. We begin in the year 2032 with man's early exploration of Mars.
According to Star Trek canon, this is barely 30 years before Zefram Cochrane's first warp flight.
This is John Kelly on board the Ares 4.
Received an uplink from Houston. The Yankees won Game 5 of the World Series.
You owe me $20.
It's not over yet. There's still Game 6. We're not the only ones making history today. Bukai just broke DiMaggio's record.
I'd like you to meet Harmon Bukai, a baseball player from the London Kings who's been dead for 200 years.
Nice bit of continuity, especially for Voyager. A giant space ravioli appears, swallows Ares forward, we cut to the introductory credits.
Really does look like a giant blueberry.
Back in the present time of Voyager, which is actually the future, not the past, which was still our future.
You know, I wonder why they bother with this Chiron at all, because it doesn't give any indication of exactly how much time has passed. Nobody except a super nerd.
Time limit.
Aww.
Chakotay is experiencing a bunch of malfunctions on Voyager.
Ah, this is what it sounds like for me every day in public.
Turns out 709 is the one who caused all this problem, trying to make things better.
Clearly Voyager is not yet ready for assimilation. A joke. The doctor suggested that I diffuse tense situations with humor.
Next time try it on someone who has a sense of humor, Seven.
A techno-hoozit suddenly appears and produces the space ravioli again. Seven, using her Borg knowledge, helps him to avoid being swallowed by the ravioli.
Now that is irony!
It's called a graviton ellipse.
And it's delicious with the tomato cream sauce.
Chakotay remembers a John Kelly story about being swallowed by the space ravioli, so he wants to explore the space ravioli.
The command module and its pilot were engulfed by a similar phenomenon back in 2032.
I remember reading about that.
Possibly have any data about the thing that John Kelly disappeared into. He disappeared very quickly, obviously not knowing what it was, before he could have recorded, much less transmitted
anything. Time limit.
Oh!
Tuvok and 709 discuss exploration. Tuvok says it's valuable, Seven says it's not, and they discover the Ares 4 inside the ravioli. Seven knows some Borg magic for their shields, so they're able to go inside. She doesn't want to go on this mission, but Chakotay does. Now she debates the values of exploration with Janeway. I think I'm sensing a pattern here.
And as we all know, Janeway will not tolerate being the wrong person in an argument.
Are you ordering me to join this mission?
Let's just say I'm encouraging you to volunteer.
I'm paid a death.
So Seven's been press-ganged into this mission, like so many others. Apparently, Chakotay's a huge Mars history buff.
Well, this is the first I've heard about it.
Makes you wonder if those old-timers were made of sterner stuff than we are.
You think we have it easy?
Are you kidding? Warp drive, shields, transporters? We're traveling in the lap of luxury.
Kelly and Kumagawa, Armstrong and Glenn, they were the real pioneers.
Having fulfilled the station's actual information quota, now back to the boat.
I can only tell you how I felt that morning when I materialized on Arrakis Prime.
You got to go to Dune?
Mood's a thing for cattle and love play.
And you met Captain Picard?
I don't recall that.
This was before you came aboard.
Too expensive for an episode on TV, of course. Probably a non-canon novel.
Would you mind recording some images when you're inside the ellipse? For those of us not lucky enough to make the trip.
So wait, why can't the Doctor come too?
One small step for a hologram. One giant leap for mankind.
To coin a phrase.
Well, I know the sentiment isn't exactly original. But the fact is, I was exhilarated.
Voyager's mission statement. So off they go to the ravioli of history.
Gravimetric interference is increasing.
It's nothing compared to what they're going through.
Off screen, of course.
Of course.
I wish you could see this, Captain. It's incredible.
Chakotay describes the view, and it's actually interesting. They shoot this well by not seeing what Chakotay's looking at first, only hearing his description giving us a sense of exploration and wanting to be there. Of course, then we get there and it looks like every other CG background, so that kind of ruins it.
You know, when I was in college, I did a study abroad in Europe, and I went to a city that had a Roman aqueduct. I put my hand on something 1,900 years old, and for me, that was amazing. But a lot of people didn't care. They walked past this thing every day, and it was nothing to them. And you know what? That's okay!
We should focus on achieving our objective and returning to Voyager.
We're not here just to find the module. We've got an opportunity to
explore. I am familiar with our mission.
This episode does like to repeat itself, doesn't it?
Paleontology was always my first love. It's the reason I joined Starfleet.
Why didn't you pursue it?
My sense of responsibility got in the way. First the Maquis, then Voyager. What I wanted always seemed to take a back seat.
Oh dear God, actual character development for Chakotay. They find the Ares IV in surprisingly good condition. The space ravioli keeps moving and twitching in an unexpected way, and it turns out it's being attracted to some nearby dark matter. Janeway orders Chakotay to leave early, but he refuses orders to tow the Ares back out into real space. The asteroid hits the space ravioli, and the Delta Flyer is severely damaged by the shockwave.
The anomaly is showing signs of returning to subspace. We have less than 2 hours.
Hey, what's up? Carson Dale here at a Pizza Hut parking lot talking
CDs. What am I looking at here?
This is my story. Break. I thought you'd like some from the era.
We have a time limit going on here.
Your own.
Oh.
Basically, Chakotay's doing them all and Seven is royally pissed.
As a result of your obsession with the module, we are now trapped along with it. In all probability, we won't survive without...
Point taken. Well, if we don't make it out... Someone's bound to come looking for us in a few hundred years. Diffusing a tense situation with humor. Remember?
Next time, try being someone with a sense of humor.
Voyager to Chakotay, please respond. We can't detect you.
We've sustained heavy damage, Captain. But we're alive. It's good to hear your voice.
Really? You enjoy listening to me?
Taurus figures out that they can cannibalize the Ares for parts. Yes, really. They're going to go after a centuries-old ship for parts. Nothing sad about that.
Because if your car breaks down on a mountain road, you can grab a part from a stagecoach to fix it.
Of course, Tom has to pilot the ship, Chakotay's wounded, so Seven has to go learn a lesson about the value of exploration by going on board to get the part.
And also, take a minute to look around, so you can tell us what it was like.
Well, it seems friendly enough, I'm going to stick my face in its mouth.
The ambient temperature is minus 260 degrees.
Nice touch that she's using magnetic boots, though, I'll give him that. She finds Kelly's body and turns the computer online. She also activates the log entries because he was recording until he died.
I'm inside this, whatever it is.
Could you hear that, Chakotay? It's amazing.
Bad. Wouldn't mind taking a look.
Everyone assumed he was killed instantly.
It's mostly a bunch of dry pilot jargon and exploration stuff, but Phil Morris is a really good actor, so he manages to sell it and make it interesting despite itself.
Phil Morris? And he's going to Mars? I thought he was from Mars!
Yeah, this is the problem when you review both Star Trek and Smallville.
The EM interference is disrupting communications and LIDAR. And I can't see the stars. There's no way I can get a fix on my position. I think I just saw another spacecraft.
Either that, or all this dehydrated food has gone to my head.
Anchovy paste. I love this stuff. Creamed liver. This is good.
It's good for your gums.
Gefilte fish. I'm not eating gefilte fish for the rest of this trip.
We see his final failed attempt to escape, and then we see him get ready to die, and it's actually very, very moving.
Whoever finds this, I hope you don't look at this as a failure. I don't.
Actually, I do have one regret. I never found out who won the World Series.
This is easily the strongest part of the episode. Seven is also moved by the logs, and with time ticking down, grabs his logs and manages to beam out.
She also gets his body.
Energize.
Once they get the two out of there, they escape. They hold a funeral for John Kelly, and as expected, Janeway says stupid things.
Space. Literally, it means nothing.
No, that's not what it means. It literally means physical area. Kind of the opposite of nothing.
We commend the spirit and the bravery of Lieutenant John Mark Kelly as we commit his body to space.
So we're so sure that we're going to return to Earth and our hope is undiminished that we will take this famous Earth historical figure's body and launch it out into the unknown reaches of the Delta Quadrant instead of keeping it. You have a morgue, for crying out loud!
You kept Suter, but not this guy?
The Yankees. In 6 games.
Something in my eyes.
And so that's one small step. Not a bad episode at all, and there's some strong performances, but I still call this POS for the simple fact that it's tried and true, standard Voyager, nothing new, no chances taken, and it's the same lessons we've seen Seven learn over and over again. It really could have been something unique, and instead they follow the pattern. I've never wanted to watch this since I saw it the first time, except to review it.
Jumping off of what you said about Seven learning a lesson, I'm bothered by the fact that so many characters in this keep insisting that she share their passion. Not just that she understand and respect it, but she has to be a part of it too.
You're holding a piece of history. Maybe even the beginnings of life itself.
Unlikely.
Damn it, Star Trek! Why can't you leave the Borg alone and respect her individuality?
Now that is irony!
So as usual, decide for yourselves, but as for me, I'm calling this POSVOY.
Welcome to the Untold Podcast, capturing the culture's imagination through speculative fiction. I'm your host, Nathan James Norman. Well, this episode goes back pretty far into the archives, but I think CGC listeners are going to enjoy it because it features a regular contributor from the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, Ken from Honolulu. You can find all of our shows at www.untoldpodcast.com, where you can also find a link to our Patreon account, and you can help support us so that we can make more and better speculative fiction. So now, the Untold Podcast is proud to present Soft and Chewy by Kenneth P. Harmeyer. I need to record this before I forget. I don't know why, though. No one will ever believe me. Let me start by saying many people believe we are the only intelligent life in this vast universe. Let me tell you, that is not the case. I met someone from another planet. There, I said it. If anyone listens to this, they will think I'm crazy. It happened one night about 6 cycles ago. I was out for my evening stroll. As I went along, I noticed the trees and lampposts weren't moving past me. Or, it's better to say, I wasn't moving past them. I put on more speed, but it didn't make any difference. I still wasn't going anywhere. All of a sudden, a very bright light shone in my eyes and blinded me. When I could see again, there was a creature in front of me. It was a very strange shape. It had a ball on the top of a mass. Out of the mass came 4 long stick-like things. I thought they might be arms and legs, but they were much too thin and long to be that. The creature moved toward me and pointed something at me. A flash of light came out of that thing, and I fainted. The next thing I knew, I was in some kind of room. The creature was on the other side of some kind of transparent partition. The creature touched something on the front of its body. The body split open, and I saw another body inside. I realized it must have two skins, one hard and one soft. I could only guess why they had two bodies, but my guess was they must have an outside skin and an inside one. As I watched, the creature shed the outer skin and hung it on the wall. It started making some strange high-pitched noise. The noise was coming out of a hole in the ball on top of the body. Of course, I wasn't going to pass up a chance to study them. I saw they had two holes in the front of the ball. They were filled with something. I guess they must be some kind of sensory organ because they kept the holes pointed in the direction they were moving. I noticed that they had two holes covered with some kind of fleshy stuff on the side of the bowl. I couldn't guess what these were for. Maybe some kind of mating thing? Maybe the more the fleshy stuff stuck out from the ball could mean, like, a better mate? I thought the ball might be a head, but it was in the wrong place, and it was most certainly the wrong size. After a little bit, I was able to understand them. Sort of. They would speak, and then, about a second later, they would start that infuriating high-pitched noise. The noise came from what must have been the mouth. It covered a lot of what they said. I was still a bit off from whatever they did to me, so it took me a while, but I guessed the high-pitched noise was some kind of primitive communication. When one made the high-pitched noise, one of them would respond. I couldn't understand what the noise was meant to convey. When they weren't making that noise, they would talk. But they wouldn't talk to each other. They talked to themselves. They would talk about going back to some planet called Earth. I thought about it for a bit and realized they must have been some kind of crazy people. I mean, really, our planet is called Earth. Then it dawned on me. They must be patients who are being sent to a crazy house. They overpowered the guards and took over. How else can you explain them talking to themselves? As I watched them, I learned things. The four stick things were indeed something like arms and legs, but I still can't see how they were able to use those spindly arms without breaking them. I could only guess that they must not have weighed much. Those legs wouldn't have supported a normal person. That ball must have been the head. I still can't guess what those things on the side of the head were. One of the aliens seemed to be smaller than the others. It had two large bumps on the front of its body. All of them had some type of fur or something on the top of their head and on their faces, but the smaller one had lots more on its head and none on its face. Also, the noise it made was much higher pitched than the others. It must have been some immature version of the others. Maybe as it gets older, it will lose the bumps and the noise will get less high pitched. They never came on my side of the barrier, so I never got a chance to study them in detail. After what seemed like a long time, the little one put on its outer skin. Then it pushed some buttons and a door opened behind me. The immature one pointed something at me. I didn't want to faint again. I thought it may have been some kind of weapon, so I started out the door. I don't know about these creatures, but the immature ones on this planet can be dangerous when they have a weapon. It followed me outside. I guess the immature ones have to do most of the hard labor because the ones with the fur on their faces just kind of stood around watching. I looked back and I saw it was some kind of spaceship. I was looking around and realized I had been in there for at least 3 cycles. I was starving. Those things are kind of crunchy on the outside, but soft and chewy on the inside. I hope more come. They were kind of tasty. And that was our story. I hope you liked it. Ken said that this story came to him when he was riding his motorcycle and someone almost ran him over. After that, a question kept running through his mind. How do others see us? Soft and Chewy starts off and we naturally assume the protagonist is a Homo sapien, like us. It has a message that's important for followers of Christ to keep in mind. How do others perceive our actions, especially those who'd be happy to eat us? It's not that believers should change the message of the gospel or not speak it, but we need to ask, how can I best communicate to this audience? Certainly many will be offended. That can't always be helped. But we don't want to go out of our way to offend others, either. How do others see us? It's a great question to ponder. And even if it shouldn't change our actions, it's good to know how those actions will be perceived.
Well, I thought for my segment I would do something kind of along the lines of our In Search of Truth segment that we normally do on our podcast, which most of the times is a verse-by-verse kind of journey through the Bible, trying to dig into the text and learning what I can from the original languages and culture to try and figure out what is in these words for us that we can apply to our lives today. other times I'll do kind of a topical segment that's still biblically based. So yeah, that's kind of like the segment from my show that I'm kind of bringing into this whatever mashup thing that you call it. But this is going to be more topical, you know, obviously with space exploration being the main theme. This is kind of inspired by two things. One, the opening of the movie Contact, where you get this sense of how huge the galaxy is. I can't remember how far they zoom out, if they were kind of trying to portray the universe as well, but you just get this huge sense of what we know about the vastness of space. And some of these thoughts are also taken from a speaker named Louis Giglio, who I don't know if he still does, but he used to travel around with Chris Tomlin, the worship artist, and to kind of share some thoughts interspersed with the songs in the concert. But anyway, just the vastness of space, what does that tell us as we learn more about the vastness of space? What does that say about who God is, and what relevance does that have to us? I mean, we think about these ideas of space travel all the time, but the vastness of space is often kind of ignored. You know, in Star Wars, there's light speed travel, right? They're always going, okay, we're going to make the jump to light speed, you know? Star Trek goes even faster than light travel. They're going like warp, whatever the crap. And so I think both of those franchises take for granted and make us lose perspective on the size of the galaxy and the known universe. Think about if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon and you get out and you go to one of those railings that, like, you get this weird funky urge to jump over. Anybody else? I don't know, maybe I'm the only person that gets that weird, strange urge. But anyway, you look at just the vastness of what you can see in front of you. It's massive, it's huge, and you can't even see all of the Grand Canyon. You're looking at this in front of you, and you're like, wow. Those are times when a lot of people will say, this is the handiwork of God. Wow. But you're still only seeing like a fraction of the actual Grand Canyon, which in full length is 277 miles long. That's massive, massive. But then that's like tiny compared to the distance, say, from the Earth to the Sun. 94 million miles. 277 is Grand Canyon. Earth to Sun, 94 million miles. Now, the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. So traveling at 186,000 miles per second, light from the Sun to the Earth takes 8 minutes to get here. So we're always looking at video of the Sun that's 8 minutes old. Well, we don't look at the Sun. That's, yeah, anyway. But in eight minutes it takes. 186,000 miles per second. It takes 8 minutes. The Sun is huge, huge compared to the Earth, the Grand Canyon. It's the size of 333,000 Earths. So roughly you could look at it as a big glass bowl and drop 333,000 Earths in there. And the Sun, which, you know, we make a big deal out of, and we should, it's a huge part of our lives, but really it's just an average star in the Milky Way galaxy. It just happens to be 250,000 times closer than the next star over. The Ring Nebula is 1 light year across. It's very small, actually. Very small. But 1 light year, let's not lose sight of that. Again, that's traveling at 186,000 miles per second for 1 year. So that's getting in the Millennium Falcon, and you want to go across the Ring Nebula. You're going to make that jump to light speed, and then you're just going to chill for a year in the Millennium Falcon to get across the Ring Nebula. And that's just 1 light year across. You know how far away it is from Earth? 2,000 light years. Oh my gosh. 2,000 light years sitting in the Millennium Falcon. It's doing its thing. 2,000 years is how long it will take you to get to the Ring Nebula from Earth. The Milky Way galaxy is 100,000 to 130,000 light years across. 186,000 miles per second for about 120-some thousand years will get you from one side of the Milky Way galaxy to the other. Good gravy. Good gravy. 5.88 trillion miles a year for 100,000 years gets you from one side of our little galaxy to the other. The Andromeda Galaxy, that's our nearest neighbor, just across the street, relatively speaking. 2 million light years. The Falcon's not going to stay together for that long. It's not even close. If you've been watching the movies, it's always falling apart. 2 million light years away. The latest estimates of the number of galaxies in the universe that we can observe from Earth is worth pointing out. 2 trillion. That's the number of galaxies. We're not even talking about stars anymore. Galaxies. 2 trillion. That we can potentially observe from Earth right now. This universe contains wonders we have no idea even exist. And Yahweh, the God described in the Bible, is God over all of those wonders, too. He's God over all of these wonders that have nothing to do with us, as far as we can tell. Psalm 8, 3 through 5 in the ESV reads, "When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him? Yet you have made him a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned him with glory and honor." You might hear people say, you know, as big as the universe is, it can't just be for us. Well, in response to that, we might say, newsflash, at the end of the day, maybe it's not for us. Now, Colossians 1:15 says that Jesus is the firstborn over creation, meaning in the cultural context that expression is being used in, he is the one who will inherit all of creation. And Romans 8:17 says that believers in Christ are fellow heirs with Christ, meaning we will also inherit all of creation. So yes, God wants to share all of creation with his people, but that doesn't mean it's all about us or primarily for us. Creation is just a great excuse to just look at the awesomeness of God and say, God, you are amazing. You are amazing. Genesis reveals that God was making things before he ever made humans, and he was calling those things good before we even came on the scene. God creates because he enjoys it. And yet, at the same time, God hasn't kept himself quarantined and safe, cold and uncaring, somewhere on the fringe of the universe with an isolated agenda that has no concern for humanity. Not only did he create human life to in some way reflect who he is, he gave human life the freedom to have nothing to do with him and even hate him if they wanted to. And then to satisfy his perfect, uncompromising justice, he became a human. And then out of love paid the price for our hatred and rebellion against him. Love and justice, both perfectly, uncompromised, working together. He lived a hard life in which he experienced rejection and judgment on a regular basis from the people that he loved more than you and I can imagine. More than you and I love the people in our lives. In Matthew 23:37, Jesus said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones, kills with rocks those who are sent to it. How often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing." Jesus was constantly misunderstood and mistreated, far below what he deserved. And he just took it all, weeping and yet enduring, both in day-to-day life and, of course, even in the end through a prolonged, torturous, and brutal death, so that anyone who wants to can have free, relentless, untiring, unexpiring forgiveness and be with this amazing God of all reality for eternity, experiencing all the wonders he wants to share with us. God is mind-blowingly infinite and beyond what we can fathom, and yet he's not removed from us. He knows firsthand what you are suffering in your flawed human body and at the whims of uncaring people. He knows. He cares. He rescues. And I can't tell you why. It's just the way he is. And I'm so grateful for that. That's it for this special sampler episode from the Christian Geek Central Network. And of course, if you want the video version of Matt and Kim's segment, go over to pos-tos.com. And of course, you can get information and access to content for all of the members of the Christian Geek Central Network over at christiangeekcentral.com. Thanks for listening.